Hey guys, one thing before the episode begins. We're going to just throw a quick plug for our seasonal correspondent Amelia's new streetwear brand, Lewd Drip.
I love it!
She has a cool selection of hentai-inspired apparel that makes you look clean while giving you that kawaii-ass sheen.
I love it!
You can even get yourself some cool peeker stickers of a SisCon show and last year's Ren-a-Waifu anime, and even some Genshin Impact stickers if you're into that.
I love it!
You can get all of that and more by going to the website lewddrip.com. That's LEWDDRIIP. So, like with two I's.
I love it!
And if you use coupon code OTAMEL with your purchase of $50 or more at checkout, then nothing will happen because there is no area to put a coupon code. But hey, it's fun to pretend.
I love it!
So go check that out right now, or maybe later, or just whenever you think about that, and let's talk some non-lewd anime.
I love it!
Welcome to the Otaku Melancholy Podcast, the podcast that is fully aware that there is no heavier burden than a heart outside of making an anime podcast every week.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes two. My name is Matt, and I'm still hoping that all your bacon burns.
And I'm Brad, and if I have to climb up a bunch of damn stairs, I will also melt into a puddle.
Well, here we are at another inexplicable episode of the podcast celebrating the third week of Miyazaki Month, which means that we're covering another Miyazaki film.
Yeah.
And which one is that? Which one?
It's Howl's Moving Castle of Cagliostro in the Sky.
Howl's Moving Castle are Haru no Ugoku Shiro.
I like Shiro. That means castle. I've learned that from seeing two Ghibli films with castle in their name.
It also means white.
Oh, White Castle. Shiro Shiro.
But yes, we previously established, this month we're going to be covering all of Miyazaki. Well, not all of Miyazaki's work. What the fuck has gotten into me? We'll be covering his most popular, his first work, his last work, and his arguably most popular, and obviously after Spirited Away is Howl's Moving Castle. But before we dive into that subject, we'll do a little catch-up, because we haven't done that for the last two or four episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to catch up. So, Brad, let me ask you something. What have you been watching? What have you been doing? What have you been playing?
I've been working on a costume for a Renaissance fair this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, it's taking up all my time because I'm an ambitious fool who puts more on my plate than I could possibly eat. And my foam came in the mail the other day, and it really hit that I've only got 1 week to work on this costume, and I'm really scared. I've never made a costume before, never made a prop before, and we're going to be basically making a simplified version of the Oscar of Astora cosplay from Dark Souls. That's essentially what it's gonna be. Yes, I'm a fucking idiot, but I'm in too deep, and I've got no choice but to either ride or die.
Ride or die for the Renaissance Fair.
Yep.
Well, I mean, you as long as you don't do it the night before, then you should be fairly good, because that's basically all that's my cosplay experience is
yeah.
The night before the con every single time.
Yeah.
And by the night before the con, I mean, I get frustrated, upset, and then I'd go to my partner at the time and be like, help me, please. I can't do this. I'm too dumb.
Yeah.
And then I would just sit there and wait for everything to work itself out. Very unfortunate. So you not been playing anything, watching anything?
Oh, well, I got a new game from the Free with Gold on Xbox. Armello.
Oh.
Also, PSA, if you're hearing this for the month of May, Armello is free with gold. If you got Xbox Live Gold or the Game Pass Ultimate Edition, whatever nonsense, you can get that for free. And also, nice. Euro Truck Racing.
Oh, dude. And also, if you are a person who has a PlayStation 4 because you could not afford or do not want to pay for the PlayStation 5, you can get Battlefield 5 for free right now.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. I've been playing that actually a little bit. Since I'll tie this into my thing real quick.
But anyways, been playing some Armello and getting my shit kicked in.
Well, that's very quaint. Very nice. I'm glad to hear that you're getting your shit properly kicked in.
Mm-hmm. As it should be.
Yeah, really, as it should be.
But enough about me. What about you, Matt? What have you been doing?
Now that I'm in the spotlight, I've forgotten everything I wanted to say.
So it goes.
So I have been doing a bunch of catch-up on Ghibli stuff. I watched Castle in the Sky. I've watched Whispers of the Heart. I've been watching a lot of Ghibli films and supplementing that with the other crap that we have to watch for this podcast, and also catching up on my seasonals.
Nice. Whiskers of the Heart, that's the one where the girl turns into the cat, right?
It's Whispers. Whispers of the Heart.
Oh, I'm thinking of A Whisker's Tale.
Can you just not do, like, or... Dude, don't retread this shitty bit again. It was only mildly funny the first time.
Yeah, but there's an unfunny valley. It's like the uncanny valley. If you do a joke enough times, it becomes funny again.
I guess that's probably true. I don't know. Maybe that's where our appeal lies, because I don't think we do anything original, because every single week I'm just whipping it out. You can read. Ha ha ha. I'm not a furry, but, you know, all that crap.
But this is not the blank podcast.
This is not the blank podcast. and also casually berating, not casually berating, but making silly remarks about other people I know.
Mm-hmm.
Also, but yeah, watching that, I've been trying to stick to this principle of only playing one game at a time, like one narratively level-based game at a time.
Yeah.
So I've been unfortunately stuck on Final Fantasy VII Remake for a good while, and I bought a bunch of games on Steam, and I'm trying to hold steady to what I said I would do, and it's getting progressively harder because I'm losing more and more interest in Final Fantasy VII Remake. Not because it's bad, but just because, you know, I want that serotonin of playing a new game.
Yeah.
You know, like, I also bought a bunch of visual novels, and I keep, every time I scroll through them, I'm like, that one's got a nice looking waifu on it. And it says it can teach me Japanese. Well, I mean, I'm already fairly stupid at Japanese.
I'm something of a native myself.
I've played Go Go Nippon a couple of times or two.
You know, I still don't know if I could just skip the 2016 version and get the 2017 version, or if I have to get both. And I don't want to waste money.
I don't know. I bought a bunch of them when they were on sale, and I think I have up to 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I've never played the game. I do know what you told me back in college, that it was really informational.
It was.
So that would be cool to learn about Japan, because I am a humongous weeb. But I'm going to be really honest with you. I'm going to be 100% with everybody. If there's not any ecchi scenes, I don't care.
That's sort of.
Well, I mean, if there's not, it would even have to elicit a genuine emotion in me, like Clannad or Steins Gate, or it's got to have ecchi scenes. You got to have one or the other.
I mean, it has like you walking in on them while they're like changing clothes or taking a bath or something like that. Nothing lewd, but you know, a little something for the horny homies.
The horny homies. The horny homies. The horny homies. I'm going to get that tattooed on me. Horny homie. So, you know, seasonals, Ghibli films, they don't mix very well together because one seems really cool and the other one is just, and there's her boobies again. Ooh-bye.
Yeah.
Sugoi desu ne. I don't know if you guys can hear that in the background, but my cat is attacking my shelf. Nora, do you want to be on the show? Is that it?
I'm sure we'll hear the jingle.
Yep. She's attacking a dollar bill. She's attacking a dollar bill that fell off the shelf. She is literally attacking money. I don't know, dude. I don't know. Sometimes I... Dude! She's eating it!
Down with capitalism.
Craig, keep that in.
Please do.
Because that was wild. I would like to just every time we preface this podcast with, we're not very professional, but we're here. Why are you always rambunctious at this hour whenever I'm recording a podcast? Whenever I'm not recording a podcast, you just don't give up. You don't care. You are dead. I have to pulse check this cat when I'm just not recording a podcast. But every time we do one, you hear a jingle in the background. That's because she's jumping from shelf to shelf, or she's running through the room. And she can't be let out because then she'll run into another cat and then be like, it's Street Fighter time. Oh, no, man.
All right, so what are we here talking about?
We are talking about Howl's Moving Castle. Released in 2004, based off a novel of the same name that was released in 1986 by Diana Wynne Jones. This movie, of course, was directed by Hayao Miyazaki, produced by Toshio Suzuki, his consistent collaborator, with a screenplay that was written by Hayao Miyazaki as well, and the same music. It's still Joe Hisaishi.
Yeah.
As we've discussed in a previous episode, the John Williams to Miyazaki Spielberg. So, what's this film about?
So we have Sophie, who works in a hat shop, and everyone wants her to want something more, but she's just happy working in a hat shop. She's going down an alley as there's a military parade. Two kings are about to go to war, and she is harassed by a couple soldiers who, you know, they just want some tea. Purely and simply want some tea. She gets helped by this stranger who gets her out of this mess and is a wizard because they end up trouncing and prancing through the air. Later on that night, she gets harassed by a thick witch of the waste. And no, not that kind of waste.
Mm-hmm.
But Sophie's just minding her own damn business and she gets cursed by this witch to become old. And through her journey, she finds the magical Hal and his moving castle. And shenanigans abound as they start to learn about each other and grow fonder of each other.
And fall in love instantaneously, as is required of a Ghibli film.
Of course. As is tradition.
As is tradition. So, one of the things that I would immediately like to set off is that while we were watching this film, because Brad and I watched these movies together, halfway through, I was like, Miyazaki, you did it again. Another 10 out of 10 picture. Your name's going to be in the lights, Miyazaki. And then by the end, I said, okay, that was really good.
Yeah. Gotta say, coming off the heels of Spirited Away, Well, they can't all be home run all stars. Don't get me wrong, this is still really good, but is it Spirited Away good? No.
Yeah, well, I came off the movie I watched before this was Castle in the Sky.
Mm-hmm.
And Castle in the Sky is really, really, really good, and it's got a lot of those Ghibli-isms or Miyazaki-isms.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's weaker than this movie, and it's weaker than way weaker than Spirited Away. But then again, like, a lot of things when compared to Spirited Away are just... they're not that very good. So... to preface this with some information about Miyazaki at the time when he made this film was intended to be a very, as you can probably tell, a very hard anti-war sort of statement.
Mm-hmm.
That was primarily based in part by Miyazaki's opposition to the invasion of Iraq in 2003. He wanted to make a movie just to piss off Americans. That's literally what his intentions was. He wanted to just make a movie that Americans would go, ew, hate this Japanese dude.
Yeah.
And he did not do a good job of that.
I mean, you told me that information before we started, and I was looking to see some kind of allegories. And unless I dug, like, literature teacher deep, then the only thing I can see from this is that war is bad.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of themes that are in this. They're not as, I feel like they're a little bit more heavy-handed than Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the thing about pollution and all, it didn't really click with me until one pivotal scene in Spirited Away. But this one, I'm like, yes, I get it. War is bad. I don't like it any more than you do, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that, you know, that if you have a legitimate message that it should be something that is just, you know, prone to criticism. But there are several themes in this film I feel like we should really talk about. And one of the things that before we go into these themes themselves is I feel like the cast might be stronger than the films we've seen previously. I mean, Howl's. Oh. I think I can change him, guys, if you just give me a chance.
Yeah. Sophie is a very fun and resilient character. She's more of a character when she's old than she is when she's young.
Mm-hmm.
She's funny when she's this old lady who's like, who hired you? I hired myself. I'm your cleaning lady. This place is a mess. And it's like, you can't tame me. I'm a demon. Oh, yeah? I'll pour water on you if you don't behave.
Yeah, I mean, Sophie's definitely got more presence than Chihiro or other sort of protagonists of Ghibli's films. And Howl himself is, well, it's Howl.
Yeah. Also, yeah. The way Sophie heckles the witch going up the stairs.
Yes.
She's like, I'm old. I'm too old to deal with any nonsense.
Yeah, she is just her just mocking this woman or woman. I just could not. I was getting so just annoyed with the Miyazaki, my dude, if you're listening, for one thing, big fan. Secondly, didn't know you spoke English that well. Thirdly, don't animate things like that so beautifully.
Yeah, from sweat just trampolining off fat rolls to unnecessarily realistic sludge monsters, he's got a penchant for something bordering on obsession.
I feel like he just sets up a list of challenges to accomplish in each of his films, and one of them was make fat rolls look good.
Mm-hmm.
And he set out and he did not accomplish it, but he made them look he did not make them look pleasant to the eyes in the good way.
He just sits down with his to-do list, with his pillars of art creation at his desk, and they say, how can I touch multiple contrasting senses at the same time? I got it.
Yeah.
Beautiful sweat on fat rolls.
Well, here is a here's actually a fun fact, because now that we've started doing this little month, I became obsessed with Miyazaki between Spirited Away and here, mm-hmm. which feels like forever ago since we recorded.
Yeah, it does.
But it did. And between then, I watched all four parts of, well, three parts of this NHK documentary, 10 Years with Hayao Miyazaki,
mm-hmm.
and it covered his years creating Ponyo. And if you really, it is a really fascinating watch, because you get to see his creativity, and Miyazaki is in fact a jerk.
Yeah.
But he's an auteur, so he gets away with it. But one of the things he talked about with his creation process is he doesn't make a script first. He just makes the images, and then he puts them up on the wall as the things he wants to happen in the story. So he painted the scene of the typhoon or the tsunami, whatever, in Ponyo. Mm-hmm. He drew a little scene of Sosuke and Ponyo meeting. And he just put up art of all the scenes he wanted to accomplish in the film. And that inspired him to make his narrative or something along that lines. And this ties back to what I'm thinking, is that I'm very afraid that one of the images he put up was the Witch of the Waste, just sweat rolls and all on his image board, and said, how am I going to get there? I don't know how I'm going to do it. But I'm gonna do it.
This speaks to me.
He's like, my art. Finally, my vision realized.
I do not create. The art merely flows through me.
I am but a vessel for it to escape into the real world. A single tear goes down his cheeks into his beard.
And with you saying that does make a lot of sense for a good number of Miyazaki films. It's beautiful, but the story is not much to write home about. And now there's obvious exceptions with Princess Mononoke. Spirited Away is not much of a story, but it's a fun journey and it's a beautiful experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that this is licensed by Walt Disney for the English dub, because a lot of the stories feel very Disney-esque. And that's probably to the point that Studio Ghibli is basically Japanese Disney.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Disney pumps out a new film every year. Ghibli over here is like one every three.
Yeah.
And you might be unfortunate and get an earwig in The Witch. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Not get the steelbook of it to complete my collection out of spite. I just refuse. I saw like 30 minutes of that film and I said, this isn't my Ghibli. I said before I was consumed with the burning obsession of all things Miyazaki.
We got to do an episode on that.
Anna Misery. Earwig and the Witch.
Anna Misery the movie.
We just record the entirety of the movie, or of us just talking during the movie, and just say like, all right, press play right now so we can comment the director's commentary. But I feel like that process he's using is really helpful for this medium, you know?
Yeah.
Because anime is primarily visual, so if you don't have interesting visuals and fun things to look at, then what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel like that's something throughout this film that it does really work well for it. There's always something going on that you cannot draw your eyes away from the screen. Every time I got a text message or something while we were watching this, I glanced at the phone, which is odd for me because normally I'll be like, somebody wants to talk to me.
Yeah.
And then I'll be lost. But every time there was something on the screen I wanted to see, be it there's a color, some contrasting colors, there was some beautiful little, you know, just beautiful little set pieces or beautiful little just, you know, environments. Like you pointed out, the boot cubby.
Yeah. That's another thing, is you can tell that this is a visual first, because you get so much Ghibli core in this film with the castle mm-hmm. itself, just the exterior of this weirdly animalistic hunk of architecture and machinery. But the insides, the changing rooms, the like tiled kitchenette, and there's so much whimsy, as you always say. It's just whimsical.
It is. I mean, we said that multiple times throughout the film. Whimsy. Such a whimsy.
I mean, this one of the main set pieces is Calcifer's little fireplace, and it's just a log holder on top of a big stone table. And it's like, I want that. That looks like a nice place to sit down, warm your hands, cook some bacon and eggs while you're reading a book.
Yeah, bacon and eggs. You could also bake an egg on it.
Oh, it's cooking.
Oh, it's cooking. Mm.
It's done. Scrape it off the ceiling, put it on a sandwich.
Me earlier. Don't repeat bits, Brad. It's not funny, but every time you do the bacon egg thing, I'm like, oh, he's saying the thing.
How do you know bacon when it's egg. Done? Well, if you hear the egg whistle, it's almost there.
Just standing up in the grill lines. Wasn't that from the smartphone episode, I think?
Oh, I think so. I have no idea.
The continuity is very fast and loose in this podcast. Who knows when that was recorded? Anyways, yeah, the whimsy, especially like you were saying with the castle does look very much like a unique animal. It feels, I mean, it seems like it breeds at points.
Yeah, it pretty much does. Like when it, after a long travel and it stops, sits down and it goes, and you can feel that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it also looks like, you know, what's this thing that I'm trying to think of? So, I'm sure you know it, but there's some American cartoon that did this thing. What was the thing I'm trying to talk about? What cartoon is it? I would know the cartoon the moment I saw it.
Use some descriptors. But anyways,
so basically, the character designs for this cartoon was that one person, it's Flapjack. Flapjack, as soon as okay. I said that. So how they did the art for Flapjack was one person would draw the head, and then they would cover it up, and the next person would draw the body, and they'd cover it up, and then the next person would draw the legs, and they'd cover that up, or they'd do it in some sort of order like that, and then they'd make the character that way, and that's what the characters look the way they do in Flapjack. And I feel like that's what they did with the castle, because there's like so many things on the exterior of that castle, like chimney eyes, there's several windows and houses, like stuff we never even see.
Yeah.
It feels like we're just hanging out in that main room all the time.
Okay, so I typed in Flapjack to try and see some reference images, and I got the treat. We try Flapjack Show. There we go. So you're saying for like the main character design or like the whole process of animation?
The whole process of the character design. They did something like that. I remember reading it, and ergo, everything you read is true, so it had to be real. But anyways, that's what I think they did with the castle. That's what it looks like with all these things just jutting out. It looks very much like how I walked up and said, man, love the siding of this house. I'm going to pick it up. I mean, there's so much to this castle I want to see more of. I really do.
Yeah.
It's
like one of those houses where you've added so many different bits over the years that is this big amalgamation of it with history. Like even on the inside where you see his desk, it's just grossly cluttered to the point where you can't even pick up a plate of damn cheese without something falling over. And it's a whole bunch of bottles, books, doodads and curios, and a whole table of food where it's just food stacked on top of food. You could tell it's very lived in.
Sounds like how I live.
Maybe you're Hal.
I am not Hal in any shape, form, fashion. Oh, to be a Ghibli As I've said before, oh, to be a Ghibli man and profoundly change some woman's life by doing absolutely nothing but being just myself. That was an absolute dreamboat, though.
Oh, yeah. Especially when it gets his last outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had a full mental breakdown whenever he got whenever he changed his hair to red, but, you know, he looked really good. He looked good with the redhead.
He looked better with
black hair, though.
He did. He did look very good with black. He just looked good. He was a very handsome young man.
You know what's really great about it, though? His pants were black, but his hair was like an off-black with a little bit of blue. So they matched, but not completely. And that's a very nice detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely adore some of his outfits and just how he dresses and presents himself.
Mm-hmm.
His voice in the Japanese dub was very alluring. And fun fact, because Brad and I didn't do the dubs for this, I cannot believe that he was voiced by Christian Bale in the dub.
Yeah, I did see the dub of this some time ago with my roommate who has the DVD. And, you know, it wasn't too off-putting. Like, it didn't...
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like a good howl. It didn't sound like, oh, this is a Christian Bale character.
Oh, so he didn't like when he was like, where's Sophie? Where is she? Where's Sophie?
Right.
Calcifer's my heart.
But also, Calcifer, voiced by Billy Crystal.
That sounds weird.
And Sophie, voiced by Gene Simmons.
I just cannot imagine Billy Crystal voicing Calcifer. I'm just seeing Mike Wazowski in the flames.
Turniphead was voiced by Crispin Freeman.
Oh, yeah, with all of his two lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, Turniphead himself is one of the best characters.
And also Keen, voiced by Daijiro Harada.
And D. Bradley Baker in the English dub. Uncredited, of course.
Of course. And of course. Daijiro Harada worked on Keen and Kaito X in Sore Ike Zukoke Sadingumi. There is no English translation.
Okay.
And you know what? You know what the comments are for his Mal page?
What?
In December 30th of 2012. Would you look at that? He's Heen.
I thought the comment would have been cough. Sorry, wheeze.
And I'm like, yep, so, there he is. That's Heen.
There Heen is. Oh, well, speaking of Heen, that ties me back to something that... So, one of the things that I kind of like about these Ghibli films is that there's never a hard antagonist, you know? Well, except, you know, the first one we saw. That doesn't count. Well, the two big ones. I immediately put myself on a quarter.
Well, the Ghibli original... The Miyazaki originals.
Yeah. Because Solomon?
Suleiman.
Suleiman.
Suleiman!
Suleiman! I just didn't feel like any just big bad guy looming energy, you know, like a weaker film might have constantly panned back to Suleiman saying, like, I've got Hal now.
Yeah.
You know, or something like that. So I'm really, I actually forgot about her towards the end of the film. I'm like, what are we doing? What are we fighting for?
For a lot
We're
of
just
these.
Fighting this.
Go ahead.
Stop the war, just to stop the war.
Yeah, for a lot of these, the antagonist is really the system or history of or culture that's just trapped us all. Like in a lot of them is industrialization. The true villain was the industry that enslaved us all. We made machines to make life easier, and then we became the machines. Although I'm pretty sure the main antagonist of Princess Mononoke was that one woman trying to, you know, kill the forest spirit.
Yeah, well, that doesn't count because I haven't seen it yet. Ergo, it doesn't exist.
The main antagonist of The Wind Rises is the wind or gravity.
I thought the main antagonist of The Wind Rises was eventual militarianism against enemies, which causes your inventions to slowly morph into tools of war.
Is that what that film's about?
Yeah, dude, it's about the guy who made bomber planes.
Oh, that's tragic. I really want to watch that now.
Imagine be like taking someone out on like a date. Like, it's The Wind Rises. It's a Ghibli film, so you know it's going to be about some cute, wholesome Ghibli core stuff. And then it's, why do I create when all things just serve to be eventual tools of destruction?
Ah, Nobel's Dynamite, the anime. This will help miners to carve out tunnels in mountains. Meanwhile, General's like, ooh, grenade.
Ooh, splody stick.
Smacks hand on Dynamite. You can kill so many poor soldiers with this thing.
Goodness, isn't there something similar about like the guy who invented mustard gas? He's like, yes, this will be helpful for this, and then we're gonna use it to kill people.
Yeah, pretty much.
Dang.
I like the reversals. I like the NASA ones where it's like, intercontinental ballistic missiles. Let's go to the moon with this.
It seems kind of cartoony when you say it that way. So, bringing it back to Howl for the temporary amount of time we have. I do really just love... This is quintessential Ghibli core with all the fun outfits, all the cool little whimsy that's in there. Just the... You know, how I was gushing about Spirited Away carries over into this film.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as hard. But I think this is more based in Western, you know, Western culture.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more mysticism when I don't know why things are the way they are.
Yeah.
So there's a totally different vibe. So I guess that's why I felt the Ghibli core, but I did not just have it blowing me back in consistent scene from scene like I was in Spirited Away.
Yeah. It's still a lot of locations that I would love to live in. It's like that West European countryside.
Oh, yeah. And even more food you would want to eat, like those big slabs of bacon.
God, so juicy. They were thick. That was a thick bacon, too.
Yeah, I thought it was just like a ham hock or something. The egg, too? Eggs were bigger than their faces.
You know the best thing about those eggs? You could see when the yolk was... Or when the egg whites went from that, like, translucent to fully white. Ugh. Tasty. Speaking of which, Austin, did you get those eggs? Thanks for going. Aw, damn it, we're out of eggs.
We're out of eggs.
What, you egg?
We have too many eggs in my place. Like, my roommate's mom raises chickens, and so we've just got, like, two big things of eggs, so I can mail you some if you want.
Unwise.
Don't tell me what to do.
Make sure
live bold.
Wrap them in some bubble wrap.
You open up the packaging and just a bunch of egg whites, a dead chicken, and a... And two solitary eggs make it alive, and you pick one up, and it's like, oh, why is this suddenly? Why? How did this get soft boiled in my transition from here to, from there to here?
Pick up an egg, it's like, this one survived. Crack it open, and somehow the yolk and egg whites are just jumbled up.
Yeah.
Can't even form right.
Dude, I might actually go and make some crappy ramen and soft boil an egg for it.
Do it. That's really good.
I love soft-boiled eggs. Like, I don't even like, one thing I would really like to preface the statement with, I hate eggs.
Really?
No, I'm not a big fan. Eggs just taste, weird to me. They taste sort of like I'm licking a hot pipe. Like, somebody's just like, this is the boiler room, and I just lick the pipe. That's kind of what eggs taste like to me.
Okay.
But, soft-boiled eggs, for some reason, taste different.
I'm fine with any eggs as long as it's not runny. For some reason, growing up, I had a hard press into me that if it's runny, then it's not cooked well. It's not cooked all the way.
I see.
And that may be incorrect, but that's just how I feel. And if I get into a fried egg that has a sunny side up egg, and that yolk bursts and just oozes out, it's ugh.
Oh, gross. I hate that. I've tried to make Dom Burry for myself several times, and I always try to put a sunny side up egg. That way it looks, more good for the photo, and every time I fail to cook the yolk, and I'll bite into it and it'll nut in my mouth, and I'm like, wow, I want to die.
Ah, the egg bus.
Sometimes you bust the egg. What?
I knew it was that. You're gonna go there. Finish it. I want to hear the whole thing.
I was like, sometimes you bust the egg. Sometimes the egg busts you. I'm sorry. I can only be myself.
What are your thoughts on deviled eggs?
Deviled eggs are the whitest food on this earth.
What the fuck do you mean? It's fucking good.
Deviled egg, dude. What is the composition of a deviled egg? It's egg, mayonnaise. It's gross.
Yeah, it's good.
I hate it. You're so white for liking deviled eggs.
Well, excuse me for being perfect.
I am sorry. I'm gonna make a bold declaration. Declaration on this podcast. If you like deviled eggs, you automatically can't listen to rap music. I'm sorry. I don't know anything about deviled eggs. I just know that every single white person I've acquainted to has liked deviled eggs. I mean, and I know a lot of white people.
Have you had a deviled egg?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then what's your problem?
Do you think I just say I don't like things before I try them?
Absolutely.
I do. I just said I do. But I've actually had them, because there's one of those things. It's like, I think I've complained about this before, but there's certain foods that people will be like, oh, have you had mine? Have you had my deviled eggs? Have you had my whatever else? And I'm just like, yes. Yes, yours is no different. Oh, you put a little bit extra paprika on it? Doesn't change the fact it sucks. Doesn't change that. It's not going to change it. I don't care what secret ingredient in it. I don't care if you actually, it's not going to be any better. I hate eggs. I hate eggs unless they're the only exception to egg is, I think I've talked about it previously on this podcast, is making a bowl of hot rice, popping an egg in it, stirring it in there.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good.
You know what's really good?
What's really good?
You scramble an egg and add it to a bowl of grits. You gotta try it. They enhance each other. It's more than the sum is more than the individual parts. One plus one is three with bowl of grits and egg.
Welcome to the Picky Eater podcast, where I just, every food that Brad lists off in this episode, I say I don't like, because I also don't like grits.
What the fuck? You grew up in Sylacauga. You were basically living right next to a grist mill. How can you not like grits?
I don't like eggs. I don't like grits. I don't like oatmeal unless it's cooked a specific way. I am very limited on my breakfast choices.
Damn, you're really hard pressed on suppressing your Southern heritage.
I don't like a lot of soul food either. Like, I'm just saying, I don't like turnip greens. I don't like green beans. I don't like pinto beans. I don't like cornbread.
You know what? Just take off all your cotton clothes. You don't deserve that either.
I'm just saying, I'm just I don't like Southern food.
What about I'm not chicken even that big of a fan of isn't that Southern?
Chicken and waffles is very Southern. I've actually had chicken and waffles before. Chicken and waffles not bad. Chicken and waffles isn't bad, but I like it when it's the tendies and not the actual just, you know, like leg of chicken.
I mean, chicken and waffles isn't really. Hold on, I just found out chicken and waffles is a Pennsylvania Dutch cuisine.
Whoa, wow.
So it's not even Southern.
It seems like such a Southern thing, you know, like your daddy didn't. Your daddy had leftover chicken. He just popped it on your waffles and he said, eat that. I don't care anymore. I'm going to go off to the store to go, like, cheat on your mom.
Papa just got out the Eggo and KFC and said, there, cuisine. Also, chicken and waffles is not a dish. It's just chicken on top of waffles. You're just combining two things.
Dude just threw a piece of chicken on top of a waffle, put some Aunt Jemima on it, said, bone apple teeth, dude, and left and never came back. Thanks, Dad. Anyway, speaking of parents that should not be thanked, Sophie's mom, I don't like that woman.
Does she have a mom? Or
yeah, she was the one that was like, that gave her the bag that had the tracking worm in it.
Oh, was that a mom or was that just like a shop owner? I don't know. It wasn't really clear.
It was
not clear.
That was her mom, and then that she was gonna marry somebody and they could be together. I mean, they said when they met her one sister, she said something about working at the family hattery or haberdashery.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of plot points that they just said, ugh, I don't care about that. But for all we know, Sophie's family is like, she's gone forever. Yeah. I don't know where she went.
I mean, that city got bombed.
Welcome to Dresden. Where's the Slaughterhouse Five? They're my favorite band.
Anyway. What's with these homies dropping these bombs? Why am I on the front?
So one of the things that I also would like to address is that I feel like I might be a boomer because I was confused during certain things. I did not catch on to the fact that I was going to call him Caliburn. I did not immediately catch on to the fact that Calcifer was Hal's heart. Like, he was like, a demon took Hal's heart. And I said, well, we got to go fight the demon. That's going to be the final boss of this movie, right? And then, if you kill me, you'll also kill Hal. I'm like, those are stupid rules. Why is that the rules? And then, tick, tock, tick, tock. Oh, he's a demon.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. You're so smart, Miyazaki.
It took me a hot second to figure out the heart in Calcifer is actually Hal's heart.
Yeah, same.
A lot of plot points with Hal is kind of confusing. Like, why he's cursed, if him turning into a bird thing is a curse, or if that's just his power, and if he uses it too much, then it becomes a curse. What this has to do with, like, the star stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was actually really cool visually.
Oh, yeah. Like when the little star crashes on the water and there's a little dude pitter-pattering on the water like, woohoo, look at him go.
Yeah, it was really cool. I really liked the little fireworks that accompanied them as well. It was really visual stunning. Mm-hmm. I was like, get out the way, your name. It's Hal's Moving Castle showing that they can do better star shots than you. Get out of the way. Get out the way, Makoto Shinkai. And speaking of Makoto Shinkai, I said I'd talk about it earlier, but one of the themes, and I don't know if it's a theme or not, but I think that Miyazaki handles old people really well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to lie. If you present to me a movie and you're like, yeah, the main character is 60 or so, I'd say, I cannot relate to that. I'm a cool, hip, young dude who likes to skateboard. Get out of my way, man. I'm going to go microwave some stuff in tinfoil. You know?
Yeah. And the thing about a lot of Ghibli elders is that he doesn't make them geriatric. They're not just old and feeble and just can't get up from their rocker. Like, they're very traditionally Japanese old people, like how she'll suit up her dress to be like a, what is it, I don't know what it's called.
Sure.
Yeah, why not? Just like a cleaning uniform, and she'll go to town on cleaning that house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, old people still have energy. It just takes them a while to get to it.
Yeah, I mean, he wrote one of, I think, my favorite characters in all of his films is Dola from Castle in the Sky. She's an older woman, but she's really the best character in that entire movie.
Yeah.
And I think one of the messages I really liked about this film was understand the difficulties of growing older, you know?
Yeah.
Because Sophie, you know, she gets older and the first thing she complains about is, I did not know it would be like this.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Witch of the Waste, although in the beginning she's very hostile towards her, towards the end, after she presumes her, you know, her original form, she becomes more compassionate and more understanding and more caring to the plight she has, especially, you know, her selfishness and her desires.
Yeah.
Like, no one is really in this film put in a point where they can't be forgiven. Even Hal, who, you know, is not the greatest person, who is, you know, egotistical in ways and by his vanity, he's still presented as a character who can change for the better. And, you know, a lot of films, a lot of shows, a lot of weaker narratives would do this whole thing where it was a suddenly heel face turn and it's, oh, I'm suddenly good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, you know, the Witch of the Waste is still probably a crappy person underneath it all, but she's changed in the majority and changed in the better in that way. And, you know, I think that's better written.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you prove me wrong about something doesn't mean I'm going to immediately say, you know what, you're right, I'm going to change my ways. I'm going to be hesitant. And I think the presentation of these characters where it's saying, you know, we have to be compassionate and understanding and give them a little bit of forgiveness, I like it.
And plus with the Witch of the Waste, she still has some of her core personality traits. Like, she's, like you said, a lot more compassionate, but when she gets the cigar from the bag and the Peeping Tom goo worm creature, you know, she's a lot more conniving and secretive. And when she finds Hal's heart, she reverts back to her very selfish, very obsessive self. And she would have been like that regardless of her age. So it's not like she becomes like full community service when she becomes her true age. She's just a lot more understanding of the situation she put Sophie through. It's like, a lot of these wizards tend to be vain in House Moving Castle, like Hal, just as himself, and Witch of the Waste, when she's focused on making herself younger, and she's very egotistical, very demanding, like how when she goes into Sophie's shop after it's closed, and she says, wow, this is a very rinky-dink shop, isn't it? Sophie's like, yeah, and we're closed, please leave. Bold of you to talk to me like that. Boom, cursed.
Oh,
and then as she gets older, wearing herself out, going up those Super Mario 64 stairs, she's a bit more understanding. Like, you walked up these stairs, or going through the hat shop. Like, oh, this is your hat shop, that nice little store. And like she's, you know, a bit remorseful, or to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think you're definitely right. All the witches and wizards are kind of jerks. Even Solomon's like, hey, no, things are going on out there that are bad. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care. War is war. It be that way sometime. You know, so.
But really, the core of this movie is that everyone loves each other. the heart of this movie is that everyone loves each other. And as tropish and cliche and ridiculous as it is, it's very heartwarming that all these people can know each other for a couple days, but be so dedicated to each other.
Yeah, that really is. While you could criticize it as being moving, you know, progressing too fast, I like that too. I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's sort of a lot of nobility in just being like, yeah, we can love each other. You know, like if people can hate each other for no reason, then we can love each other for no reason. So, I mean, if you wanted to just pick apart and be like, oh, that's just unrealistic. I don't think so. Like I said during the film, I was like, I'd fall in love for Hal instantly. Bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
He can just look at me and say, hey, and I'd be like, take me wherever you want me. It's just like that.
It'd be like that.
It do be like that. And the worst thing is that they don't think it'd be like that, you know?
But it do.
It do. They just be like, it don't be like that. But it do be like that. And it's so upsetting because it do be like that. I don't know why I'm getting so upset. Just screaming. It do be like that. It be like that. It do.
It do.
It's Scooby Dooby Doo. Also, fun fact, this movie lost at the 2005 Academy Awards for Best Animated Picture. It was beat by Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. It was competing against that and Corpse Bride. And I don't like Howl's Moving Castle as much as other films, but that's not stiff competition.
Man, I completely forgot about Corpse Bride.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, you're not a Hot Topic goth.
Yeah, but whether the nomination for Best Animated Feature going to Wallace and Gromit, whether that's deserved or not, we can all agree that the Academy Awards and the Oscars and all those major Hollywood awards for anime features are a fucking crock.
They really are. I mean, the only award show that is not full of crap is the Otomel Annie Awards.
Oh, yeah. Prestigious.
Yeah. Prestigious, even. What won last year for best anime? I forgot already.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Oh, I think you put Isaac in, and I put Kaguya-sama Season 2. Truly, we are not a joke. We are very prestigious. And the winner is
we're just both up there with the envelope, and the winner is, and we both say different things at the same time.
Yes, it's just like I Kaguya, and then it's okay, well, best animation goes to I Yeah, but the award shows are jokes. And I do, the innovation presented in this film is remarkable. I think it's really stupid that the Academy can't recognize a foreign film unless it's legitimately one of the best films ever, like Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was that leaked email from just a couple years ago of one of the electors for the Oscars or Academy Awards, whichever, where he says, yeah, I don't know much about these animated films. I just know my daughter talked about Disney once, so I'm going to vote for that.
You hate to hear it.
Hate to hear
it. You do hate to hear it because there's a lot of innovation in these films, especially this one. And I really, really enjoyed it. And all the little elements that were in it blended together to make a solid, solid narrative, although I was confused at parts. The only thing I have issues with is it just kind of keeps going when I've run out of steam.
Real quick before we move off topic from the Oscars, shout out to the latest Oscars of 2021 having a 56% drop of their viewership. Let's just see that ship sink.
You know, award shows don't matter. The real award is the award you give it in your heart.
The real award is the score you give it on your My Anime list. That's what matters.
That is exactly what matters. And so I guess this is where we give that very important number.
I guess so, if you want to.
All right, I'll give my final thoughts and reviews.
Okay.
In my review. So, overall, this film was an absolute blast. It's very Ghibli core, as we've stated over and over again. It's a very entrancing and beautiful film. I mean, if you haven't seen it, what are you doing? Why are you here? Go watch it. I mean, you've already seen it. You probably are just listening to us because it's the newest episode and you need something to listen to because it's out and you don't have any choice in the matter. But if you haven't seen it, you should go see it. It's an absolute blast. We didn't even talk about the music, and it's crushing it on the music again.
As always.
I mean, as always, this is going to be a common theme across all these films, I feel like. But this film touches on a lot of messages that I really, you know, like, I too consider myself a pacifist. That's why I'm a punk, as people call me, a punk-ass bitch. So, I really like the message, and I like the visuals. I like the characters. I think there's a stronger cast than probably any of the other films. And it's a really enjoyable movie. I'm glad I got to see it. And I have it on Steelbook. I was so sure I'd like it, I bought the Steelbook before I even saw it. So overall, finishing it up and just putting a little bow on this, it's an amazing film. But it's not Spirited Away. But it is iconic. It is a lot of elements working in it that make it tremendously, I think, important to anime and anime films. For a 2-hour film compared to the other Ghibli films, which can go up to 2.5 hours, I feel like it overstayed its welcome, and some elements of it were, to my boomer brain, a little bit confusing. But I know it's magic, and I shouldn't try to think about magic. But I was a little bit confused in parts, but overall, I really liked the characters in this. I really think it's, like I've been repeating, really iconic, really important film. One of his best, for sure, if not one of the most popular, for good reason. And while it doesn't reach the heights of Spirited Away for sheer perfection, it is still an amazing film, which I think you should see. 9 out of 10.
Ooh. So, how's Moving Castle? If anything, it is a great piece of inspiration. If you need some inspiration, How's Moving Castle is a good place to go. For a lot of the aesthetic that it gives in its design, in its character, the costuming, the music, just puts you to this place of like hillside wonder and whimsy. Did we mention the whimsy?
Whimsy.
And something else that we forgot to mention is that there's a lot of nice airship design in this film. A lot of that fanciful Miyazaki airship design where they're a lot more animalistic instead of mechanical, more kind of like aquatic with a lot of flappy bits. And I think this, alongside Nausicaa, but of course this being 2004, so it's a lot more harnessed of Miyazaki's airship style, where it's a really pins down what Miyazaki wants his planes to look like, with big giant Lugia metallic wings and rear sphincters just pumping out like flying monsters, which is a bit unsettling. But all of this film is just, it's not winning in the story department, and there are a lot of themes which come up, give a little bit, and just kind of drop off. Like the whole house curse, the star stuff, how Sophie's age relates to all of this. I know it's related to her love, but there's a lot of transitions in this movie where she goes older, back to younger, back to older again, where it's not exactly clear how it works or why it's going this way. But this is a very pleasing film to look at. And it's a nice, if you have one of those days where you just need something to relax to and take you back to a place of relaxation and better days, House Moving Castle is a good one to follow. And I give it a modest and respectable 7 out of 10.
Jesus Christ. You're so harsh sometimes.
I said modest and respectable.
When have you ever scored something higher than me that wasn't hentai?
Isaacin and Spirited Away.
I gave Spirited Away a 10. You can't give it above a 10.
Yeah, but my 10s are basically a mat 13, so there you go.
I don't like your 7s. You give weird things lower scores. I'm like, what a great movie. It wasn't the best, but it was still high greatness. Meanwhile, you 7. Oh, Happy Sugar Life. You gave Happy Sugar Life a...
Yeah, because I like Happy Sugar Life for what it is, but I will recommend Howl's Moving Castle above that.
Yeah, but Howl's Moving Castle has a lower score.
Yeah, well, the scores are arbitrary.
Just gonna have to have an episode of just breaking down all of your scores and just asking you why. Why did you pick this? For what reason?
Also, you scored Kiss and Sis higher than I scored Howl's Moving Castle, so who's really to blame here? Your trash taste, that's what.
No, it's you for your trash taste for giving Howl's Moving Castle a 7.
Your trash taste for giving Kiss and Sis a fucking 8.
You're so fucking trash taste, I heard Gigak's gonna call you up. So you can be on that podcast. Bye.
But we should make fucking bank if that happened.
You wouldn't give a fuck. You wouldn't look back in the rearview mirror. You'd be like, goodbye, piece of shit Otaku Melancholy Podcast. What kind of name is Otaku Melancholy? Otaku Melancholy, get out of here, you pretentious hipster.
Man, you know me. If I create something, I want it to be the best. If I ever, for some ungodly reason, get invited to Trash Taste, I'm going to be taking notes. I'm going to be like, what equipment do you use? What's your process? All right, let me take a video. Whenever Garnt says something, I'm like, write that down. How do you say that? What was his intonation? Like, I'm going to steal all the methods and like take that back to the Otaku Melancholy Podcast. I will not rest. I will not die until I see it surpass him.
What do you think the recipes of their success is? They're more popular. I see. Bold choice. Should have done that ourselves.
Steps become more popular. Step one, be more popular. Quite an enigma.
Interesting. Can you give me some tips on that?
Tips to be more popular. Tip one, don't be unpopular. I see. We're right at the impasse there, unfortunately.
I don't think I can do that.
Well, that has been Howl's Moving Castle. That has been Howl no Ugoku Shiro. And we have been the Otaku Melancholy Podcast. Or...
What's up?
Or, Romanji still in progress. Sorry. And we have been your hosts...
Matt.
And Brad. Catch us every Tuesday and every provisional Friday... on our website at otakumelancholy.com, where you can find our previous episodes and our other streaming sites, as well as our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Discord.
Yes, yes. And speaking of our rock-solid Discord, today's quote comes from a rock-solid man named Dwayne Johnson, as he has once said, being a true badass has no weight or gender requirement, just 100% commitment to anime. Powerful stuff. All right, that's it. That's the show. Goodbye.
Take care.
Gambate!